Victoria Shepherd for WILL, and this is the Mid-American Gardener podcast, where we love to talk about anything connected to gardening in central Illinois. I'm excited today because my guest this episode is new to the Mid-American Gardener family. Now, he may be new, but he's a wealth of information when it comes to spore-producing organisms that feed on organic matter, including molds, yeast, mushrooms, and toadstools. Dr. Andrew Miller is a research professor and serves as mycologist and director of the herbarium at the Illinois Natural History Survey at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. A native of Illinois, Andy completed his doctoral degree at the Field Museum in Chicago, Illinois. An expert on both large macrofungi and small microfungi, Andy has described over 100 species of fungi new to science. He's very well published and has given numerous lectures and workshops on the diversity and importance of fungi. Welcome, Andy.
Hello, thank you for having me.
Well, thank you so much for coming into Studio A for an episode of the Mid-American Gardener podcast. This is the first time you've been in here.
That's right.
Well, we are glad you are here because when we met previously, you said September, October was a great time to talk about what we're going to talk about.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Okay, first of all, please, can you tell us the basics of what mycology is?
Ah, mycology. Well, the joke is mycology is better than yours, as opposed to entomology or ichthyology or mammology. Yes, but myco actually comes from the Latin root for fungi, so it's basically the study of fungi, since ology means study of. So. It's basically the study of one of the five kingdoms that we have out there right now.
What are the five kingdoms?
The five kingdoms, the plant and animals are two different kingdoms, and then we have the bacteria, the protist, and then lastly the fungi. So it's one of the five kingdoms.
Oh, wow. So first of all, today we're going to talk about fungi and mushrooms in general. And then focus on some of the most common fungi found in people's yards. Mm-hmm. So what is the difference between a fungus and a mushroom? Or are they both fungus or fungi?
Ah, very good question. Usually the word mushroom refers to something that probably has gills and is very large and edible. Whereas fungi is a very much broader term to mean everything in the kingdom fungi. So somewhere around, we've described about 130,000 species of fungi so far. But really, when you talk about mushrooms, there's probably about, about 20,000 that occur throughout North America.
Oh, interesting. So mushrooms come under the umbrella of fungi.
That's right.
And you mentioned all those thousands of different species. Have you actually come up with, I know you've described many species. Mm-hmm. Have you come up with any or found any yourself?
Oh, yeah. All of those are actually are mine that I have collected throughout the world and identified as new and then described them and put names on them. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. That's impressive. I did not realize that when I read your bio that they're actually right. Yours.
Yeah. I mean, the first one I did years ago was, of course, very exciting. But now I would like to just put a name on it and not have to describe it as new. It's kind of it's more time consuming to do that. But when you take the fact that only about 7% of all fungi have been described, 93% of the biodiversity out there is yet to be discovered and described, it's not too difficult to actually find a new species of fungi. It's pretty easy.
Wow. So maybe some people listening to this can then get excited about going and looking for a new fungi.
Yeah.
Okay. So now, talking about fungi, what is the difference between macrofungi and microfungi? I mean, is it true that size matters?
Well, in some cases, yes. That's a relative term, as you can imagine. Pretty much the way I define it is anything you can see with the naked eye, I would probably describe as a macro fungi. And then anything that's much smaller than that, you probably have to use a 10-power loop or some sort of magnifying lens in order to clearly see what it is. We refer to as microfungi. So,
really, really tiny.
Really tiny. I mean, microfungi fall into a broad category, including anything like, you know, mold in your refrigerator or things that might be growing on your sandwich in general.
But in the garden, though, we see a lot of, and I've seen a numerous out at the moment walking around in Champagne. Are any of them edible?
In a relative sense, all fungi are edible once, but that's
you may not eat it again.
That's right. You can eat it once and you may not be around to eat it again, but, there are a few things that are edible in the garden. For the most part, no, not really. Most of the edibles are going to occur out in the forests.
So probably not too sensible to eat them just to try them out.
No. And the problem mainly is, and I don't want to give chemicals a bad name, but in your garden and in your house, if you do use some chemicals, mushrooms are kind of like sponges. They go out, they digest their food, and they suck in all the organic compounds and all the nutrients into their fruiting bodies. So you might be getting sick not from the fungus, but from the lawn, the spray that you just put on the lawn, or any herbicides or pesticides that may be in the area.
Oh.
So it's, it's something to think about.
Something to think about yes. Before you put chemicals down.
Mm-hmm.
Now, does the color of fungi, of the fungi or a mushroom, have anything to do with its toxicity?
The color, no. But in general, you stay away from the all-white ones, generally the amanitas that are deadly toxic. And we do have some of those in our area. So it's usually the ones I talk about in my lecture on edible and poisonous mushrooms. If you're going to eat some, I stick to the ones that are brightly colored or differently colored and not white.
So the one I sent you the photograph of...
Mm-hmm.
That we think was the root of the problem we had with our dog recently, that was an amanita.
Yes, that's correct. Right. Yeah.
Well,
and they do come up in your yards from time to time. But, you know, you can touch them, you can rub them. As long as you don't ingest them, then you're perfectly fine.
Oh, so because he got... I had communicated with you before our meeting today and had mentioned that Henry had a terrible experience with his nose.
Right.
I mean, it literally doubled in size. Yeah. It looked awful. Mm-hmm. And we took him to emergency care at one point because we were quite concerned about him.
Mm-hmm.
So you're saying...
That probably did come from a fungus, but not from an amanita fungus.
Ah, okay. So you have to ingest it.
Right.
Okay, because he likes to get his nose into a lot of things.
So one possibility, and because my wife's a small animal vet, I have inside intel.
Oh, do tell.
She's seeing a lot of cases of blastomycosis, which is a microfungi that occurs in the soil. So a lot of dogs that like to root around in the soil, if they get a small cut or something on their nose, the fungus actually will, the spores will go into their cut in their nose and start to cause an allergic reaction or even worse, an infection in their nose.
And oh, wow.
Eventually end up in their lungs and then they need to be treated for a fungal infection. And
well, it's taken a long time to clear it up and he wasn't allowed any play dates. So. But, yes. Okay, so let's move on to what are some of the top fungi that we might find in central Illinois? So I am going to leave it to you to provide the Latin name of these to avoid embarrassing myself. But we will include photographs and names on the Mid-American Gardener website of all that we're discussing today so that listeners can see if they have similar things in their gardens. And we can find out if they perhaps need to remove them or leave them be. Let sleeping dogs lie, so to speak. So number one on the list is the common name is vomiter. Tell us about vomiter, Andrew.
Vomiter. So this I added this to the list as the number one mushroom because it is fairly common coming up in grassy lawns and in pastures and farmers' waterways. But it's it has the dubious reputation as being the most common poisonous mushroom in North America. And primarily it's because it starts out bright white. It comes up in lawns and looks really nice and edible. And small children out playing in the lawns would like to crawl over to it, maybe take a bite out of it. Now, fortunately, it's not deadly poisonous, but it is going to cause
discomfort.
Yes. A lot of vomiting and diarrhea, as the name implies.
Not discomfort just for the child, probably for the adults as
Exactly. But it's a quite easy mushroom to identify. It's really the only mushroom that I know of that in full maturity, the gills actually turn a dark olive green color. It's pretty easy to there's no other mushroom that I know of that has green gills like this.
Because they're usually dark brown, aren't they?
Yeah, usually white or dark brown or pink. Those are the three primary colors. But it's also known as a green-gilled Lepiota because it used to be in that genus Lepiota. But it's fairly easy to identify. It has a very broad stalk and has a little ring around the stalk. And then it has a white cap with a lot of scales on top. And it can come up in fairy rings from time to time, but this is something you're not going to find on wood. You're going to find in your lawn growing on soil.
Okay. Mm-hmm. That's rather interesting. Fabulous name as well.
Yeah.
Now, the next one, number two that you have on your list, mm-hmm. Inky caps.
That's right.
What is the Latin name of that?
Inky caps. So these are mostly in the genus Caprinus, and one of the more common ones is Caprinus micaceus, mainly because on the top of the cap, it looks like you sort of sprinkle little mica chips on top. So some of these Latin names actually do make sense. They're described for what they look like. But this is the next set of mushrooms are all going to be things you commonly find in wood mulch. It has a plethora of different fungi growing and decomposing the wood mulch that you get. And there's not really much you can do about it. If you're going to go buy mulch and spread mulch, if you add a little rain and water and humidity, along with the right temperatures, you're going to have these things coming up in your mulch.
Now, is that one of the photographs you had sent me? That is the sort of the powdery. It's more spread out.
Yes. So that's the last one on our list that we'll actually be talking
about. Getting back to that later.
That's
then.
A slime mold. Yes.
Okay.
That's right. The inky caps are notorious for, as the name implies, dissolving into an ink as they mature. Some people believe this was the first known ink that people actually used to write letters with.
Really?
They may have used this. And what the mushroom does is actually auto-digest itself. So the cells break down at maturity and basically turn to a big black ooze. And some of these are very short-lived. They'll come up about, in the middle of the night, and they're gone by 6 or 7 a.m. in the morning because they're very small and delicate, whereas the other inky caps are more substantial. They'll last for a couple of days. But they're all going to turn to this black ooze and just auto-digest and dissolve themselves.
So you might actually not even see them.
That's correct. Yes. You have to get up quite early if you want to see the very small, fragile ones.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Now, number three on the list. Common name is bird's nest fungi.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us about that.
Yeah, so we have really two very common species here, Crucibulum levii, that does not have any striations on the inside of the bird nest, and then another one Cyatha striatus, which means it has striations or little lines on the inside of the bird nest. And so it's really easy to tell, to identify those two species. But another very common fungi that grows on wood chips in your garden, especially also along trails in the forest where people have put down wood chips. I found this on Green Street last week, just in the flower beds where someone had spread a bunch of wood chips in the flower bed. And as the name implies, again, they look just like little bitty tiny bird nests. They're about a centimeter in diameter. They're really tiny.
Wow.
But it looks like a little bird nest. And then inside, it has these packets of spores. And these packets look just like little eggs. So
bird nest and eggs all in a tiny little package.
Exactly.
So there seems to be a common thing that's coming up. Mm-hmm. Mulch.
Right.
I mean, mulch is supposed to have a lot of benefits, right?
Right. And they do for keeping the plant material down. But mulch doesn't last forever. And that's a good thing, or else we'd be up our eyeballs in mulch if we didn't have fungi to decompose it. So you can't blame the fungi. They're just doing their job. All of these are known as saprobes. So basically what they do is take very large molecules and turn them into smaller molecules and back into the soil again. So that's why your mulch doesn't last forever, is because you have lots and lots of different fungi that's in there inhabiting the mulch, breaking it down.
Oh, interesting. Now, four on the list. I will say a little side note on this. The common name is dog stinkhorn. There is another name that is used to describe this one that is part of a dog's anatomy that you are more than welcome to look up, but I am not going to say it on the podcast. So, Andy, what is the Latin name for dog stinkhorn?
So the most common one we usually find in our garden mulch, again, is Buntinus caninus. Obviously, caninus named after dog for the dog stinkhorn. And the reason it's named stinkhorn is many times you'll smell these before you actually see them. Yes, they actually stink. They have quite a foul odor to them. But there's a reason why. These things actually hatch from a small egg. It kind of looks like maybe a small white egg, about the size of a quail egg. And it'll have a long stalk on it that's bright reddish or orangish. And at the very tip of that stalk, it has a mucilaginous substance, kind of a brown substance. And that's where the odor comes from. And the reason is all the spores are at the top of that gel-like structure, and they have to attract insects. So they smell really bad to attract insects to come and eat that gel off and get the spores all over their legs, and then the insects disperse it. So the fungi is pretty smart. It uses insects to do its dirty work to spread all its spores. Excuse me.
That is clever.
Mm-hmm.
Now, final one on your list. Another interesting name, dog vomit slime mold.
Right.
Tell us about that one, Andy. I have to question though. These are all legitimate names that you are giving me here.
Oh, absolutely. Okay. According to Wikipedia, they're out there.
Okay, so dog vomit slime mold.
Right.
Tell us about that.
So the Latin name is Fuligo septica. And we talked earlier about how we had five kingdoms. Well, this one really isn't in the kingdom fungi. It's actually moved over to Proteus now. All the slime molds
are.
It's an imposter, yeah. All the slime molds are typically studied by mycologists, so they used to be in the kingdom fungi, but we found out they're really Proteus. But I still put this on the list because a lot of people are going to see this again in their mulch chips. And it starts out kind of a yellow color and then slowly turns to brown and darker brown. And it just basically looks like your dog or your cat may have vomited all over your wood chips.
And this is the one that just sort of spreads and, as you say, looks like vomit.
Exactly.
Now, is that one or any of the other four that we've mentioned Should they be removed? What do we need to do? Or are they quite natural and can be left alone?
No, they're very natural. And I would just leave them alone. Enjoy them for the beauty and the history and the biology behind, the natural history behind them. Because as I've tried to share a few of these fascinating stories, maybe it'll gain some greater appreciation for them when you actually find them in your garden now, since you know a little bit more about them.
Well, absolutely, especially if you don't actually have to exert any effort and remove them.
That's right. I've had several people say, what can I do to get rid of these mushrooms in my front yard? And the truthful answer is to dig up the top 3 foot of topsoil and replace it all with concrete. And that's the only way you're going to get rid of these fungi. They're going to be there whether you like them or not, because they're doing their job. They're decomposing the soil and organic matter. And when the time's right, they're going to produce a fruiting body so they can produce more themselves.
Well, there you go. Open your arms and welcome them in. Now, you mentioned number 5 was started off yellow. Mm-hmm. One of our staff, a friend of hers, Stacy, who lives in Champaign, she sent a photograph of some really interesting looking fungi. And can you describe what it looks like to our listeners?
Yeah, absolutely. So this is called the sulfur shelf or chicken of the woods. There's two common names for it. I like sulfur shelf because I think it describes it a little better. For one thing, it has a shelving pattern to it. So it's sort of one layer on top of another. And sulfur, if anyone knows what sulfur looks like, sulfur powder is bright yellow. And the pores underneath this, it's not a guild mushroom. It's going to have pores underneath. They're bright yellow. And even the tips of this, when it's younger, are bright yellow. And then further back, it's more of an orange color.
I mean, it kind of looks like candy cane, right?
It really does, yeah, especially when it's fresh. It's really interesting with the bright orange and yellow colors. And the nice thing about this is you really can't confuse it with anything else out there that's toxic or poisonous. It's a pretty easy one to identify.
Now, is that one edible?
Yes, it is. So that's kind of where the word, our name chicken of the woods comes from, because it's kind of a little bit stringy like chicken. And I've been told, I've tasted it, it does taste a little bit like chicken. It's not one of these slimy mushrooms. It's a man's mushroom. It's very hearty and yeah, more like steak than it is slimy.
I mean, do people actually, with things that are edible like that, can you... Are the recipes, or like, I'm just thinking, when you send chicken in the woods, could you deep fry it so you have deep fried chicken in the woods?
Absolutely. And people have, yes. There's lots of recipes online for deep frying it. I like it for breakfast with some eggs, scrambled eggs, and maybe a little bit of cheese on the eggs and a side of chicken in the woods.
So, and where do you get your chicken in the woods from?
Yes. So typically in the forested areas, the public lands where you're allowed to go out and hunt and collect mushrooms. Chicken of the woods always grows in the fall when we have ample moisture and we have lower temperatures, not like we've had this week. But if it cools off a little bit, these things grow at the base of dead trees and grow on wood. So it's pretty easy to find them.
Okay, well, I'd like to add that please check the photograph online that we're going to post before you go out foraging for some chicken in the woods. Mm-hmm. And now, Stacy does not have to remove this from her garden, does she?
No, it would basically be impossible to remove it because it's decaying the inside heartwood of her tree. I noticed that the tree looked quite old and dead, so it's probably already pretty far gone, but
okay.
All of the mycelium, all the rest of the fungus is inside the middle of that, and it's going to fruit repeatedly year after year. So if she wants a good, sustainable...
Just enjoy it.
Yeah, sustainable food.
A great thing to talk about, right?
Yes. Uh-huh.
Now, I have one more question for you before I let you go, because I cannot believe we're already run out of time. This has gone so quickly and been so educational and informative. But if you were a fungi, what would you be and why?
Oh, no.
Oh, yes.
Oh, my. What would I be and why? Probably this little species of entoloma that's bright blue and on the outside, the cap and the stalk are bright blue and the gills are a bright pink color. But this only occurs in New Zealand, so I had to travel there a couple times to find it. It's sort of like one of those mushrooms on a mycologist's bucket list that they have to find.
And it's an entoloma?
Yeah, it's I'm not sure if there's probably a common name for it, but it's very brilliant when you see it. A brilliant bright blue with pink gills. You know, you can't beat that.
Oh, it sounds fabulous.
It's really gorgeous.
What, out of the five that you mentioned, did you come up with any of those?
No. Unfortunately, these are very common, well-known, well-established species that were described over 200 years ago. So, no, I can't add these to any of my list of new species.
Okay. Well, I mean, the information you have provided is very interesting. And I think a lot of gardeners will be happy to know that they don't actually have to worry about things that are in their garden necessarily.
No, absolutely not. And you know, when their flowers aren't blooming and everything's just what I call a boring green color, enjoy the brilliance and colors of all the fungi coming up in your mulch.
If anyone has a question, is there a website or somewhere they can go if they wanted to send in a photograph and say, is there anything at the university where people can go and get more information about plants or fungi that they have?
Not necessarily at the university. There's some good websites called Urban Mushrooms or Urban Mycology. And you can also just Google, what is this mushroom in my yard? And there's a couple interesting websites out there that kind of list the top 100 possibilities with very nice photos. But I'm also willing to receive emails, and I often do, working for the Illinois Natural History Survey.
Oh, well, then we will add your information to the website. So if people have questions for Andy, that's very nice of you. Thank you for that.
Sure.
Thank you very much, everybody, for listening to another fabulous episode of the Mid-American Gardener podcast. A Mid-American Gardener is a production of Illinois Public Media. This episode was produced and hosted by me, Victoria Shepherd. Executive producer was Lisa Broltz. Find us on the web at midamericangardener.org, where you can stream us as many times as you like. This and past episodes are also available through Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and the NPR One app. Please do subscribe, review, and rate with abandon so that we can improve what we do. And if you have any gardening questions for future inclusion on either the TV show or podcast, email us at yourgarden@gmail.com. Message us via Facebook or call and leave a voicemail at 217-300-8224. Thanks again to Andy Miller. I'll be back in a couple of weeks with another gardening whiz. Until then, get in your gardens and check for spore-producing organisms. Thank you.